Kelsey Brockmore, and I am bringing the September 2012 Omaha Riot Advisory Council meeting to order. Next on the agenda is a public comment period, but actually what I would want to do first is we have a new member. I want to give her this very second to maybe introduce herself, tell us how she uses the microphone, and what we're going to do on the show. Mrs. Trish Pam, welcome.
Hi, am I eligible?
Yes, you're not. Just push your button and the light comes in.
Can I use my 37? I'm sorry. First of all, I think, as you know, for having the, serve the advisory council. I work with Catholic University of America. I come to the same hoping, to serve in this Canada. I promise to be able to act. I wanted to work on the advisory council because I was concerned about some of the public comments that I was hearing. I am a member of both public and natural conservation. And rather than complaining, I thought I'd be a part of the solution. I do miss very carefully. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yes, welcome and thank you. So next up, we have the public comment period. Do we have any members of the public receiving that wish to address the draft? Do you have one person?
Yep.
Okay, so that person please come forward. And I'm pulling from around the public right now. It's a great time if you have any ideas for any topics that you'd like for the RAC. If we have time or if you have the comment to talk to us about, we welcome you here and those ideas as well. So go ahead.
I'm Chris Barnes, also known as Stitch Model. I promise my tone will be a little bit more cheerful. Thank you, everyone, council members. Thank you once more for allowing me a moment to address you. I'd like to first thank you for your work in recent months to change your meeting format to allow for more input by writers present. Specifically, I'd like to thank Joseph Kitchen for being a champion on that front and preparing myself and others who asked for that change. I look forward to improving the process and action tonight. Also, I'd like to encourage the council to continue to address other potential roadblocks that may be preventing you from your full potential as representatives of the Wander Riders. There are far too many safety problems to be tended down. Rider lives are depending on your unyielding insistence for answers from WMATA on numerous issues. I'd also like to request the RAC council members to find a way to make themselves reachable by riders beyond a single generic email address on the WMATA website. An email address, a phone number, something for each of you, so riders have a more direct way to reach out to you. Of course, if you're not on Twitter, as before, I encourage you to join the conversation already happening there. If you volunteer to represent here, you should be easily reachable by riders you represent here. Again, I'd like to request the council find a way to have these meetings web streamed for real time for those who cannot make it in person. I'll end with a final request. If you're not a techie, I'd like each of you to consider writing a letter to the riders you represent. In your own words, introduce yourselves and start a conversation with the riders you represent. I'm offering my website, and I'm certain NSIPC Metro would also offer his blog to post these letters to the riders you represent. Thank you again for your time.
All right, thank you for those suggestions. Any comments for our public speakers? Seeing that, I also want to, are there any other members of the public that want to address the RAC at this time? Seeing that, I also want to take just a moment to remind both our own members and those who are here tonight in attendance that last month or the month prior, the RAC did adopt a new public participation proposal. So what that means is, and I'll just explain briefly, is that after the staff presentations and after some of our more important discussions, not say like the approval of the agenda, but say the emergency communications panel, we will have time for the public to comment. If anyone not being members of the public want to comment, we may have to leave the time frame. But we do want to hear from our writers directly, and we appreciate you all coming this evening. So the next agenda item is approval of the agenda. August and July meeting minutes this afternoon. I mean, over myself. I think I'm going to ask that we postpone approving these minutes until the October meeting.
We actually have, I think it's like, what, five or six to approve? Can we at least approve all the ones through July?
What you have is what's available right now. I think there's a meeting, I think there's one from March, and maybe one other.
I'm not saying we're behind many months now, I think we should.
I will.
I'm going to move that we approve all of them through July.
You don't have them in front of you, so I don't, I would caution you against doing this.
We're going to vote every meeting for the last five.
So we need to vote on July, August, that's what we have in front of us.
There's some before that, isn't there?
March, June.
Right, those need to be submitted to you to review. You don't have them. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I mean, I can look at these very quickly, if everyone's okay, and then I can just look at my names. If everyone's okay with that, with all you guys approving the meeting minutes, and then that's kind of.
I second, and I read them earlier today, but I don't know about this one, I think they're fine.
So then. Seven, yes.
Can I just come, and would you add number 84?
Which number is it?
Block 5. Oh, no. So we talked about July 11th, page 4, which was the statement, not the truth, I don't know, you got 4 and 1/2. You say that, that's more to the.
You know what, you're correct. It's the bottom of page 4.
I saw similar on page 8.
Okay, you know what, I need to go back through and recheck these then. Obviously, those were missed in my review, so if you all would like to approve the August minutes, then go ahead, and I'll get the other stuff to you by the end of the week.
Okay, so going on to August, any comments on the August meeting minutes?
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, I've worked all day, I don't have a chance to do these on the same day, so I would like to suggest we table. Maybe one suggestion would be that any that are not approved, that maybe we just all get an email that we're going to read them before the next meeting, because we have enough time to.
You'll have them by the end of the week, in advance of next week's, or next month's meeting.
Okay, so we will have the minutes by the end of the week or next week, all the minutes of that 4 months.
And for interested members of the public, I'll put them on the website, just so you can review them as well.
So the next item on our agenda is rail service standards. We have Andrea Burnside, as well as Tom Harrington, to speak to us about this topic. Will you please come forward, thank you.
Good evening, everyone. Andrea Burnside, Chief Performance Officer, happy to be here to talk to you about rail service standards. And as you may recall, going back to February, we were here as part of your work plan development activity. And at that time, we talked about a couple of things, one of them was the board's strategic planning work that they're currently undergoing, and that continues to progress. So one of the proposed goals under the plan, and you'll be hearing a lot more about this in the next coming months, is to exceed customer expectations by consistently delivering quality service. So the strategic plan is going to provide a broad roadmap for where the agency wants to go. But what we need is more detail to kind of accomplish managing the service today and planning it for the future. So that's where the rail service standards come in. Setting standards is a critical action the board needs to take through the strategic planning process to move the plan to implementation. So in particular, when we were here back in February, we asked the RAC members to provide input on what quality service looks like for rail to you. And you gave us some great feedback. I believe at that time, kind of went around the room and everybody provided inputs on that. And so some of your feedback was about reliability and predictability, service frequency and coverage. And I think somebody, I had a quote written down that Metro should go where customers want to go. There were some concerns about safety on platforms, customer service and communication. There were some others, but that kind of, I think there was another one I played with this, and that kind of covers the different things that were important to you. And I assume continually. So as I said, this evening we're here to talk about rail service standards. We had some discussion with the board a couple months back, and they asked us to kind of take a time out and come back and talk to the advisory group and the public as we put more detail to these standards. So we gave the same presentation last night to the Accessibility Advisory Committee, and I'm happy to report as of this afternoon, there's live, there's a blog post and a presentation on Planet Metro, and with a link from our homepage on WMATA.com. So there's an opportunity for members of the public to go in and provide input on the same standards that we'll be talking about tonight. So Metro has never formally adopted standards. And when I say Metro, I'm talking about the board. But they want to do that. And part of that is because the board, through its governance work, has adopted some new bylaws. And the bylaws actually require them to do that. So the bylaws say that they should adopt and review key performance standards to provide policy guidance regarding the quantity and quality of service. But even though they're not formally adopted, standards aren't new to Metro. In fact, they've been around since the beginning of Metro Rail. But they are informal standards. They're standards that are used by staff to manage and plan the service. So the board has never said that they want the standards to be the staff has decided or the general manager has decided what those should be. And before we go into the presentation, Mr. Downs, knowing I was coming here tonight, wanted me to make a couple important points to you all. Number one is what the standards are not, because I think there was a little, there was some communication that came out when we first started talking about them that Metro was trying to lower our performance targets or that we're planning a service reduction. And that's not the case at all. These are set standards. So we want to make clear what standards are not. It's not a plan to go out and start reducing the service. And that also that this should be considered as phase one of a standard setting process. So it's a fairly complicated process, and we want to approach it kind of in phases thoughtfully. So we don't anticipate right out of the gate coming up with the full list of total standards that we're going to have for rail. Instead, we'd like to have a progression where we start with the foundation, kind of the really key performance standards for rail, and then build upon that. And the key standards that I'm going to talk about were what hours are we open, how frequent should the trains run, and what should the capacity be on board the car, which is also known as capacity for car, so we'll go over each of these. There may be other standards. Certainly will be based upon your input last February, and I'm sure today. And again, where we will continue down over the next month and over a time period as well. So consider this to be phase one. Ultimately, standards are important too to help define our capital investment needs. So you set standards and set expectations for a certain level of service. You need to have the rail cars to do that. You need to have the capacity of our electrical system on the rail. You also need to have on the operating point of view, you got to have enough train drivers, and you have to have enough people to maintain those cars. So those are the important things that are related to the standards. Okay, next slide. So without what happens if you don't have standards is customers might have expectations that Metro can't meet. People may travel to other cities, for example, and see a system that runs 24 hours a day or that comes every minute. And they might come back to Washington and have that same expectation. So we need to set standards so everyone understands what our capabilities are with our resources and our capacity. So it's a good communication tool. As I said, the board wants to stay policy focused. While prior boards have addressed standards to some extent in kind of pieces in the past. They've never taken it on overall as a policy. They have, on the other hand, talked about standards for bus service. So in 1998, there was a big effort to define what is regional and non-regional bus service and establish the route standards for regional and non-regional. And then it's year 2000, more detail was added with regard to crowding, running time, and non-ridership standards. So we need to be doing the same thing on the rail side. There is a policy that exists in terms of the hours that were open on rail for special events. But interestingly, there's no policy about what time during normal operations we should open and close. Okay, so I think we're ready to move to the next slide. So, thinking about service delivery today, we'll talk about what we do today and what we're proposing for standards. So today, we're going to be looking at when, whether the hours of service, how often, which is known as train frequency. Also, the technical jargon for that is headway, but we're going to talk more layman's terms tonight, which is train frequency. And then how crowded are the trains, and we call that passengers per car. Okay. So today, our hours of service based on historical practice, the amount of resources that we have budgeted, as well as our need to maintain the system. You can see up there that we open at 5 a.m. on weekdays. Monday through Thursday, we open at 5 a.m. and we close at midnight. Friday, we're open at 5 a.m. and we close at 3 a.m. Saturday, we open at 7 and close at 3 a.m. And then Sunday, we open at 7 as well and close at midnight. And I mentioned already the board policy about when we should open early or when late for special events, and that doesn't exist. It's adopted next year. So, okay, next slide. Again, today, train frequency. Or you could also think about this as maximum customer wait time. How long do you have to wait for the next train to come? So, focusing on weekdays and the system core, the map up there, you can see it doesn't have the normal colors of a metro map, and they've colored it especially to reflect combined frequencies during weekday rush service. So in the green, which is the core of our system, which runs on the red line from about Silver Spring to Grosvenor, on the orange blue line from Roslyn to Stadium Armory, on the yellow green line from Longmont Plaza to Mount Vernon, and on the yellow blue from King Street to Pentagon. This is the area of the system where most customers are traveling during the peak. We have customer wait times of between 2.5 to 3 minutes. And that is also, as you mentioned, part of the system where there's interlining. That means two lines running together. So customers don't have to wait more than 3 minutes during the peak period for a train to show up. As you get towards the end of the line, that wait time currently is between 4 to 6 minutes, depending on where you are. And then there's a segment there by Arlington Cemetery where the wait is between 6 to 12 minutes. So I guess a key message here would be a customer at the end of the line experiences a maximum wait of 6 minutes. If you're at Arlington Cemetery, you could experience a wait of up to 12 minutes. And so again, why is that? And we'll talk more about that in a future slide, but part of that is system design, the equipment that we have available, and then things like tunnel throughput. But essentially, the bottom line for customers is more frequent service equals lower average wait time. Okay, let's go to the next slide. Okay, passengers per car. This is again how many people should be on a car. So, during the rush period, in the peak direction. So, if you're traveling in the rush hour, you will be going from the orange line. You're going from, say, Vienna into downtown or the peak direction. The question is, can you get on the train and can you get a seat during this time at the busy station? So the planning standard is 100 passengers per car. That's our de facto standard that we use for planning. And what that looks like to a customer is that all the seats are taken, plus about half that many additional customers are standing. And 100 is the optimal number that we aim for, but there's a range of these based upon engineering load configurations and standard space for customers. Of a low up AD up to 120, but we aim for kind of the middle at 100. And this doesn't mean that your actual experience with the customer is going to be 100, because as you know, you could be maybe a metro center and a train pulls in and the train operator says, customers, please spread out along the platforms, meaning that some of the cars are going to be more crowded generally in the middle, and some of the beginning and the end are less crowded. So 100 is an average. It also could depend on what station you are entering the train, although this is the standard for affiliate stations. And it could depend on an incident that may have just occurred, so if a train was offloaded or fewer offloaded, you could experience much greater crowding on any particular day. But again, this is kind of the average and the standard that we use for planning purposes. Why is that? We won't be talking about it. It's capacity, it's related to train frequency, and the number of cars available. So a point here also is that frequency, which we talked about in the last slide, and capacity, which we're talking about on this one, passengers per car, they're kind of counterbalancing standards. So as the passengers per car increases, we increase the frequency or the headway to offset that. And then on the other side, if passengers per car goes down, we might cut the headway and match that. Next slide, please. We always get the question of, well, what do other people do? And we've shown this slide to the board in the past in terms of doing some benchmarking with other agencies. And what we found is that many agencies use standards, and it's kind of a mixed bag as to whether they're formal adopted standards, whether they use them in service planning, or whether they just report them. So you can see on the checklist here that almost everybody uses passengers per car as a standard. And in particular, Chicago, Boston, New York MTA, and LA Metro have actually adopted formal standards. Others use them for planning purposes or report on them, but those agencies have adopted them formally. Also on frequency, the same agencies, the Chicago, Boston, New York, and LA Metro have formally adopted standards. And then I won't go over the whole list. You can kind of see it there. But essentially, we're kind of in line with what other folks are doing. Questions?
Yeah, why did you use MARA over the internet?
I believe at the time we were doing the survey, we didn't get a response from them in time. But we do have some information about their headways and so on. So we have some more information afterwards, but they are a similar system to us. And Barn as well. Okay.
I noticed that MTA does not use the standard set here. Just out of curiosity, and I've used those for like 7 years, and it was kind of 1%. I would have to get a sending, and I thought I'd do 2.5. Have you ever compared to see if it's like SEPTA and MTA is not using the standards, what quality services? Have you ever tried to compare and see what the quality results are?
Are there actual results reporting on it?
Is there a way to do that?
Many of them have scorecards online that they challenge with, for example, service delivery, like frequency, how well they adhere to the scheduled service. Is that everybody they use it differently? So it's pretty unique to each agency. They think it's important, but they measure it differently, so they may only include some things and not others, so it's hard to benchmark in that sense.
I'm going to interrupt this for a minute, and just for a reminder to everyone, points of clarification are fine. Any questions about analysis and things, try to hold off until the end, and we also have our public participation process to see that we'll be monitoring.
Yeah.
so it's today that there are some challenges that we face, there's some considerations. So we don't want to set standards that we can't meet. So as we set standards, we need to think about resources and capacity and kind of think about pressure. So we have sort of this up pressure that during the peak, the ride ship has those maps out. We run every available train as hard, fast, and far as safely as possible. But then the down pressure is that in the off-peak, we have some budgetary constraints. So we can't afford to run more off-peak service than we currently do. So we kind of have this push and pull up and down. If you think about physical constraints, they do limit faster service. So our system design currently prevents trains from running less than 2 minutes and 15 seconds apart. The fastest headway that we scheduled today, as we saw there, is 2.5 minutes. But we do have the opportunity to insert trains into the schedule to ease crowding. So if we know that there are many, this is kind of where the two frequency and capacity measures go together. If we know that trains get too crowded, we can insert a train into the schedule to accommodate that. And that's known in the transit jargon as a tripper train. So that actually makes it appear to customers that trains are coming more frequently. Tunnel constraints exist. They're physical, meaning that more trains can't fit into the tunnel. And then we also have electrical challenges. So there's not enough traction power to run all 8-car trains going in both directions. It requires power to do that. And we have limits on that. Also, our fleet size is dependent on long-term capital investment decisions. It takes a long time to decide you want to buy new rail cars, to procure them, to have them designed, constructed, and then delivered. That's a pretty long process. So we really won't have any more fleet size capacity until all the 7,000 series cars are here. As you know, we have some pretty old rail cars. We have some of the original cars in the system are still with us. That could be contrasted to buses where they're buying new buses all the time. We don't buy new rail cars ever. Up until now. And then resource constraints also limit the service. Like I already mentioned, you know, we need to have a budget to, in order to hire more operators, mechanics to maintain those cars and these rail cars, and also to solve some of the core capacity problems. More tunnels, more bridges, those take a lot of money. Next slide. So coming down to the final slide in the deck here is it talks about the standards that we use today in those three areas. Again, kind of the message is this is sort of the phase one, setting the foundational standards. And what we want to do now is move to formalizing standards for board adoption to establish policy guidelines. So it's no longer up to the general managers to decide these things. And certainly the general manager in practice doesn't decide to change the hour of service. It's always discussion with the board, but this would formalize that. So the hours of service would propose that those be adopted as what they are today. And they're up there again. No change from today. In terms of rush service frequency, today, as I mentioned, in the slide earlier, it ranges from 2.5 to 6 minutes through the system. And we would propose to have that standard be 2.5 to 7 minutes in the future under this policy. It is a bit difference than what we currently plan for today, and basically that would be anticipating the addition of the Silver Line. Schedule is still under construction for the Silver Line, so we don't have the specifics yet, but prior estimates have indicated a frequency of about 7 minutes. I don't know if you can talk about that for the Silver Line.
Talk about this in a little more detail, but the bottom line is the, Andrew alluded to the push and pull between frequency and passengers per car. The Silver Line operating plans have been on the books for over 10 years, which is what we're doing. In the environmental documents for Silver Line, it had a plan with a 7-minute phase, we are reevaluating that. In a few months, we expect to come back with the final plan for approval. But what we're evaluating at this point is, what do we expect the ridership loads to be? and, you know, basically what we're capable of delivering for next year. So it's sort of keeping that in mind, you know, what's likely coming in sort of the next year or so.
So, to get to the last couple of there, the last area we would close for phase one Saturday is the passengers per car, and basically keep the same planning standard that we have today, which is 100, with a range of low of 80 up to 120. So that concludes the presentation. I'd be happy to take questions.
Great, thank you both for your presentation. Now we're at the Q&A session. We've got maybe about 28 minutes for this portion of the agenda item. So what I'd like to do is to hear from both our members and the public. RAC members, please remember to raise your placard if you have a question about the Q&A. First, how many members of the public have a comment? Okay, we've got three. Okay, so what I'm going to ask is, because we only have about 28 minutes, and I've got a fair number of RAC members that also want to comment, is that those three individuals of the public, please come up to the, we don't have a chair for you first, come up to the table first, and if you can, limit your comments to 2 minutes each, just so that we can ensure we get enough time for everyone, both members and the public. And if additional time, of course, we'll also, you know, ask them more questions in the public if they have it.
My question really quick. At the beginning of the presentation, you said you wanted to make clear that this wasn't about lowering the performance standards, but at the end of the presentation, you talked about lowering the performance standards. So I'm just confused on that.
Thank you, Dr.
It's relative. I suppose you could say what a limited difference is lowering a standard. We don't have a formal adoption standard right now, so an adoption standard that would be realistic when we get the data to the system with the system.
Okay. Specifically referring to Arlington Cemetery, which currently has a headway right now maximum of 12 minutes, and your presentation says it goes 14 minutes. Thank you.
So the
quick
people
are responding
and
we got the second and a bit of public comment. I just want to follow up on that. I think also that was in reference to the June presentation, in which really the hours of service of passengers were presented similar to what we've seen here, but the frequencies, we had an upper limit that took into account the entire system and all segments, and it said at that point was 15 minutes. And so I think the concern was, oh, you know, the whole system might have some kind of 15-minute frequency or what. But this, and particularly the graphic that we put, I think it's supposed to represent what's out there today. I think it's an important distinction, 6 going to 7, 12 going to 14, and definitely an increase change. I think that's what the one you're commenting on is a significant change that, you know, the board's adopting the standard. That would be consistent with potential future civil line operating plan. But I think that's certainly an area for comment.
Let's go to our next public comment. I'm going to go from my right to left, please.
My name is Kurt Rashke. Just briefly, first of all, is my understanding that the design that we have on the system, except for the N route, which is 90 seconds, is up to 135 out on the N route? At the K&N junction, so I'm wondering where that came from.
About 10 years ago, Metro did a core capacity study that went back and analyzed actual capacity on the system, looking at the signal system, 12 times and so forth, and established 26 trains per hour on any segment. That was actually limited primarily by the four of the junctions where 2 lines together being kind of the real limit. And so with a lot of the operating plans we're looking at, you know, that's at 26 trains an hour, about 2 minutes, 15, 20 seconds, something like that, is kind of our limit. In practice, we get certainly on the orange, blue line through, you know, broadly going into the flat bottom, we certainly approach that. That limit, but also what happens is, particularly in crowded conditions, the dwell time at the station is also very little that we can do. So, that's what we're, we work off in terms of a reliable number, that 26 trains per hour.
So we actually need to assume it, Mark, and in this case, I've got to have assume it into the question and the response, because we have actually a comment, so we'll probably just continue to talk for now. Okay, and the last public comment, please?
My name is Joshua. You guys looking for adding some, maybe one of the extra train, the blue line, the turn off, the, riders.
So we've now finished the public comment period, and let me remind everyone, this is a work in progress. We got the proposal, so we'll just have to figure out how to propose over the next few months to define what's necessary. So I'm going to now start with the RAC, that I will have to ask our questions. I'm going to start with this end. So is that Victoria or Candace? Victoria. And we got about 20 minutes for this session. Please be mindful.
I was looking at the slide that mentioned the consideration for setting standards, and you mentioned electricity power upgrades. So do you have a plan in mind, for example, when all the electrical upgrades are complete, you can run late pressure that you'll be presenting that in the planning to go in these different constraints on the level of insurance? And do you have any idea of the electrical upgrades?
And we're doing some electrical upgrades as part of our special forward planning. But that's not the same thing as adding additional capacity. That requires, that's something different in the part of the funds. If we're doing a little bit of that, but it's not necessarily up to the level that we would need to run all eight car trains. So operating all our being called ARC, being able to run all eight car trains is kind of a package deal. You've got to have the number of trains, you've got to have the electrical system, and all that takes funding.
The current system is constrained at roughly 50% per train. So which we're at, for example, on the red line, when we're pretty close to it, when we're running 8-car trains, we're shaving around the fifth line with 6 cars, and propane is still issuing. So, but to answer your question, at this point, there's no funding set in to go beyond that. So that funding would need to be added to expand the increases.
Well, I guess the bigger question is, how you would visit these things, and some of these insurance that it's very bad for the case. If any of these insurance would be.
Really, but the board to make those decisions if they want to provide the funding, or if the region wants to provide the funding for those improvements.
How would you rebuild the setting standards when, for example, some of these constraints, is that, you know, a timeline to come back to the business and say, what is it to fix?
I'm going to give you all like 30 more seconds and then you got it.
Yeah, but I think the standard of 100 persons per car is likely to still be a reasonable standard. And I think the issue is going to be, as we project out and if the project growth continues, we're going to struggle to keep all lines under 100. And I think that's where we obviously would then, you know, put priority on. We've got to, you know, meaningfully expansion, we need power expansion, but keep the lines at the 100 standard. Okay. Standard could be a powerful tool to help advocate for it.
Thanks, Robert.
I have two quick comments and one question. I'm glad we're doing this. I was surprised. I wasn't there when I started. I was surprised that there's no standard that I can see for other than rush hour. You know, because I know I occasionally hear about 30 minutes. As well as, I expected something about escalators. I think that's about service getting to the train. My question is, how do you reconcile the numbers that it says 2.5 to 3 and so forth with the Rush Plus plan, that, you know, the blue where I hear in Solness between trains, is it because you're talking about going over this arc of the cemetery path, or I don't see that 12 is going away, but it doesn't seem to have that. Are you taking that into account?
Right, the slide we looked at that said today's train frequency is service today under Russian bus. We think that it all changed between 6 and 12 minutes on the blue line right now. And the standard, which was on the last slide, still indicates the constraint with Arlington Cemetery. So,
so you're saying that you're expecting people to transfer from train to train to get around so that they don't have to wait 12 minutes
anyway? If, right, if you're trying to minimize. However, we also recognize, particularly for many trips going to the Boston Boston corridor, it's still going to be the most direct path to go through that. One of the reasons for Rush Bus was anticipating the Silver Line operating plan, trying to put something in place to start to basically look at the impacts of that and to sort of change behavior. But I think as we come back later to talk Silver Line, we have to keep going.
Thanks. Nathan, can I address your first comment about standards not during rush and for elevated reform? As I mentioned, we'd anticipate having more standards as we kind of go through this process. So this won't be the first time that we're here to talk to you. I think the idea tonight and the first round is to kind of come up with these foundational standards, which would be kind of key.
Okay. I want to talk about the resource constraints. Has the Vermont board been provided with any data that will show if you use this, spend this much money, you can reduce the wait time by 1 minute? Have you got any data of that sort? Or projections of that sort?
I don't think it's been presented in that light, but once the standards are in place, it does provide the opportunity to have that discussion.
Well, just a comment on that, though. It would seem to me that that should be part of the presentation, is how much it would cost to maintain the 6 minute standard the way you can reduce it.
Thank you. Ben?
Oh, just quick comments. I think in general it's difficult to react to this because it's not detailed enough. And specifically if you look at the train frequency map, I mean it's great that we have some clarity on some of the lines in terms of the frequency. But I think if you did a line by line, as in the green line we expect this, the yellow line we expect this, that would be a lot easier to react to, and that would, I think, mute some of the criticism of, hey, this looks like you're actually, you know, lowering the standards. If you had a line by line, I think that would be very helpful. I think on the last slide, you have, you know, 2.5 to 7 minutes is optimal. Optimal doesn't say that that's a standard to me. A standard says something like required. You know, optimal sounds more like a target that's not accountable. Where a standard says to me that we're going to do X. Another question is, what are the consequences of not meeting standards? Is Metro going to publicize that they meet or do not meet the standards? It seems like if you don't have some sort of accountability mechanism, then it's just a suggestion, which is basically what it is now, which is sort of formal. I am interested also in the 8-car rail issue, and I'm wondering, did any of the track work that we're doing, you know, all of us as riders are sort of suffering through now, involved in bringing that up to code? Because I think 8-car trains would be a wonderful benefit from all of that, and if that's taking place, that's something that we can be publicized. On the Silver Line issue, 7-minute headways, that's fascinating. Can you tip your hand a little bit about whether that's going up or down in terms of the discussions that you're having? That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So the answer to this question, I don't feel like you have the answer here. But
actually, there's one that I should have mentioned about accountability. That's a very good point. So if you're setting standards, you know, how do you know if you're achieving those standards? And we, as I think you know, we have the quarterly reports of the board called Vital Time, and it's presented to them every quarter. It's also up on the scorecard of the monitor. And that actually addresses the frequency. So are we adhering to the frequency that we schedule?
But that's the frequency in this sense of in the rush hour, the entire system has a frequency of X, or is it on, you know, during rush hour, the blue line has a frequency of X?
if this would be, if the standard is adopted, it would be a subset of how we report it right now, the contract performance measure. So we would have to make sure that vital signs include that information, as well as obviously hours of service. We can measure that on a quarterly basis, but the passengers per car certainly would be a new thing we add to vital signs. So the idea is to be transparent and accountable on these ones, for about the, how we're doing this one. Repercussions for not meeting them, I suppose that's a difficult discussion with the board when they take a look at vital signs and want to know how we're doing. And we would hold the general manager accountable for that.
Any questions?
I have a few questions, so I'm going to agree, because I want to hear to other people having time. But I think the reason why I have the main question is I think they on the nail, hit the head on the nail, by saying the statement of this, it was really the amount of questions that I have. I will say this though, I don't know, but when I talk to people have a concern about how, what metro standards are. The bigger question about what I hear from people is how Metro measures the standards, how Metro says, this is how we, this is how Metro reports, this is how we know a bus is on time. So the biggest debate that I know, that I hear about bus timeliness, because it is something that's already in place, is a lot of people challenge whether or not Metro is actually measuring it accurately how on time the bus is. Because of the wind. So I guess if you could, I don't want you to do the name, but I guess if you could think about how and publicize how Metro will measure how the trains are on time and are running in line with the standard.
The other thing that I will say about is, you know, this is my question, and then I'll stop. Would you be willing to publicize in a better, more open way, not in this quarterly report that sometimes people read and sometimes people don't, but in a way similar to where if I go to my county police department webpage, I can see how many homicides and crimes happen in a month. Can we make it somewhere on Metro's webpage? I think if we're going to use the standard, we should use monthly. We should be able to say monthly, this is what happens on my line every day. Can you think you can do that, and would you support it or something like that?
The board actually, we were producing the vital signs of the exist now on a monthly basis, and they asked to see it quarterly.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about the board. Forget for the board. I'm talking about for the public.
I'll take your request under consideration.
But do you, my question is, do you think that that's something that we could do, and that's something that we should do?
We have to look at how quickly we can get the data and how the data is available in order to do that. So, transparency and accountability is always a good thing. But if we do that, we want to make sure that we have the data readily available and accurate and ready to go that quickly and that frequently.
Madam Chair, if I can ask you a question, because I know that I have more questions, I'm pretty sure other people have more questions, and I know we had this discussion a few months ago, but can we send you questions or John questions that we did not ask here and ask and send them to Metro staff and see if we can?
Yes, certainly. That's always an option as long as our guest presenters are open to that. I'm going to send for John to send that question. Thanks. So I do have a question. I have a comment. One is to follow up on what Joseph said, is that I hate setting standards of great, but I think the riders are more concerned with not just that the standard is set, but how can I verify? How can I make sure, yeah, this train is actually coming every 2.5 to 3 minutes? And that's not necessarily, I think, the goal of your presentation today. I'm going to give you something that you can think of. How do we put that in the performance measures? How do we let people feel confident that we are trying our best to meet the standards, make it independent to go on the steps and see that we are meeting the standards? The other question I have is one that I don't think I've heard questions come up about yet, is the hours of service. I thought I had a pretty good understanding of what it meant when the Metro closed or when it opened, but I wanted to know if you could maybe tell us again what that means exactly, because I'm seeing our transportation logs, and with the national game, you know, having, I guess, adding 10 hours and the Metro closing, and then I'm thinking about folks that work 2 or 3 jobs, janitors that get off late at night. Can you explain to us what it means when you say that the Metro is going to close at 3 a.m. on Friday? So that I know if I walk into La Pont Plaza at 3 a.m., I'm trying to figure out, I had in my mind what I thought was happening, but I'm not exactly sure. So can you explain?
Well, this doesn't address special service or things like the napkin. This is normal operating hour, looking for business. It's a separate policy, and it's separate looking at that. So that's not what we're here to talk about. This is just normal operating hours of service. And I believe, depending on where you're entering the system on the line, the closing time may be a little bit different, right?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a rolling time.
It's a rolling time and the system closes the office.
Okay, well, I guess that's where I have my concern, that when you say 3 a.m., are you saying it's leaving all stations at the end point east of the city and then coming through? I just think that we need something better, because I don't think I'm actually ready tonight. So for me, I'm not looking to say, oh, I got to rush and catch the train at 3 a.m. I'm looking only by one. But to me, this doesn't, I don't know, this may be a conversation for another day. I don't understand when you say the train is going to close at 3 a.m., when it's really going to close, depending on where I'm at. And I think we need to better explain to people what that means, especially for the folks that work there.
We'll try to get those to the issue.
We thank you. It's good to see you again. I heard this discussion last night at my meeting. My group, AAC, is very interested in what the RAC has to say regarding this. Hours of operation was something that we talked about. Station platform, the capacity on station platforms is another item. What we were concerned about, maybe you can comment on this, one of the questions I asked was, what is the timeline for getting these fundamentals to the board? And I think you said we're looking at sometime in October. What I'd like to be able to do is to be able to collect, I think, what's important to Iraq, because I think these scorecards and what we're discussing here are fundamental to more to the RAC than to the AAC, but we'd very much like to be able to support the recommendations of the RAC as they go forward, so that when we speak before the board, let's say in October, if that's a good time, that we're speaking with one voice between the AAC and RAC, and we may be able to stress things like capacity on the platforms as a safety issue, but also being supportive of the RAC. What I hear going around the table here, I think we've hit half the table so far, is that there are going to be a lot of suggestions. How can we organize this so we make an effective presentation for the board?
That's fine. I think that was just a general comment.
Right, but the timeline. Yeah, timeline. I think you gave me a timeline last night, something about like mid-October, we could get suggestions in and they would be considered.
Well, the next time the customer service and operations committee of the board plans to discuss service standards for rail is at their October 11 meeting. So ideally, you could get comments back to us before that, so can we ask them? If we get on the day before, it's going to be pretty challenging. But I personally, I don't expect them to adopt anything at that time. I think it's an ongoing conversation, especially if significant input is coming from the AEP and the RAC. The board certainly wants to take that into consideration. May I suggest that if you have a lot of different standards that are important to you, that you prioritize them, again, because we're thinking of trying to do this in a phased process. So if some things are more important than others, prioritizing would greatly help.
Okay.
Yeah,
we'll look on later about that. So we've got 5 more comments. What does that mean? Does that mean like on the garage paying the surveyor or at page 20 of 36?
Yeah, that basically means how much of the cost of operating is covered by the fairs, kind of technical term. So as you know, the fares that people pay to ride the system don't cover the cost of operating the system. It has to be subsidized by the jurisdictions and the governments. So that's what that refers to. So if you have, oftentimes rail is pretty productive in terms of fare recovery.
Great. And I noticed that, so it is an R, so that means, again, I'm sorry, I don't have a little sheet, so I can't reference it. But, that means it's been looked at, but not.
R means it's pretty passive, like after the fact they report on it, so they don't really use it for planning purposes. But they just report on after the fact, a couple months later, they just report on how they did. So they're not using it kind of in an active way, that's what R means.
Okay. Chris?
Thank you. My question about the red line, the comparability of Silver Spring and Grosvenor. I know Silver Spring, I'm a bit more familiar with it, was a terminus for a period of time. Was Grosvenor, why was Grosvenor selected, or is it similar to our load factors?
And you mean selected in terms of the design of the system? Because it's, you know, we turn back there because we can, in the sense that we do have a pocket track at Grosvenor. But yeah, there was, you know, going back when the system was designed, there was an expectation of where loads would be. Certainly, we don't really hit the max loads until you get closer to the core. And when we measure the 100 person per carbillion at those maximum load points in the peak direction, one thing we talked a little bit about at the June meeting was by adopting a passengers per car standard and sort of asking us to report passengers per car on a more regular basis. It's going to put some pressure on us to basically come up with data that we don't necessarily have. At least at this point, we have peak hour and we have it at the maximum load points. But we would like to expand that to look at different times of the day and other parts of the system to have a better handle on how loads are spread out around the system. And that would maybe get into the issues of power loads doing a program versus a Silver Spring. In other parts of the system right now, we report at the maximum load point, which in the case of the red line, it would be between DuPont and Farragut North in the inbound direction from Chase Road, and on the other side between the Gallagher Place and Metro Center, heading back from the Glenmont direction. So, to answer your question, that's where we can turn the train around because of the pocket train. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just have a clarification. You mentioned that the Silver Line would be out for 7 minutes. And that Ogden Cemetery service would be every 14 minutes. And the assumption there is that the Blue Line would also be every 7 minutes. And where there's a gap, there's a much bus train that around the cemetery that would be every 14. Am I reading that correctly?
That's correct. And again, this is a. We have some plans. There's going to be further discussion at the board on the Silver Line operating plan. And I think this is really where we get into constraints and how these things push and pull against each other, and how it's truly a system. In other words, if we do something in one part of the system, it affects other parts. We talked about a constraint of 26 trains an hour, and particularly crossing the river, that 26 trains per hour is really where we're at capacity. By adding the Silver Line, we're going to have three lines going through Roslyn, being three separate endpoints. And so if you took 26 trains and divided by three lines, you get 8.5 trains or a 7-minute headwind. That's the origin of sort of the 7-minute base for that. And I think the issue here is we can try to increase frequency on the Blue Line, but it may mean higher loads exceeding 100 on other lines. And I think that what we're looking at right now is what's our latest ridership for next year in the projections, and sort of how can we balance those things. But yes, the operating plan in the plan has a up to a 14-minute headway.
And just one other quick comment. As you mentioned the whole time of the limit, I used to ride the Blue Line on a regular basis between 10 and 10 on 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 minor federal holiday, you have all this money. So it wasn't so much to switch at Roslyn, if you hear about it, it was also at full time. And I think Metro is a golden opportunity in the current board that they're facing to look at putting more doors per side, which would, as you replace the fleet, allow you to lower your goal. And about 2 years ago, we had someone come in and talk about it, and they said, well, you know, there's crash worthiness issues, and I have to believe that with current technology, you can do it to our system now, four cars per door on the interstate. And I just think that has to be something to look at going forward, in terms of trying to maintain short headway, because otherwise, your goal time is going to be not the capacity of the cars, not passing switches, but the goal time for the switches.
Okay. Deborah?
I'm telling you, we're going to be in a tank with a getaway, we're going to get a new red car. We're going to be good, we're going to get better, we're going to do a better drive performance than what we have now.
So, the ride performance, certainly 7K has some features that, you know, are newer and more comfortable, but in terms of frequency, that is constrained more by the system constraint that we talked about in terms of how many trains can go through any segment of the system. At this point, just adding more rail cars helps us with the number of peak car trains we provide, and that helps with capacity.
Great. One last question. What did you mean earlier when you said things were happening by phases? Can you explain this, I guess, what's going to happen each day going forward until full adoption?
Well, I think it is yet to be determined how the board wants to approach us, but I believe the idea is to adopt standards and phases. So in other words, not wait until all the standards are determined and adopt them all at once in one fell swoop, but put them in place in kind of a phased process.
Okay. So thank you both for presenting to us today on this important topic. I think that we're actually going to get together with the AAP and figure out what we want to do as on the that project. I think you have additional input and additional criteria to consider, and probably will have those if any last of today. So I appreciate you coming in. We all really thank you. And we'll be in touch through John if you have any additional questions. Okay, so the next agenda item is the emergency communications panel, and this gets at page 33 of 36 in our packet. As some of you know, back in, I think it was June or May, the RAC became aware or basically hearing from quite a few members of the public and incidents in the media, as reported by the media, where there were unfortunate incidents occurring, and it appeared that perhaps staff as well as security personnel, government, state police, or the individual that was a victim of a crime did not necessarily know what they were supposed to do in those types of incidents. And so Carl Seif, who is not with us today, because he's away on business travel, put together a proposal, we agreed to it, we presented that proposal to the board. The board then agreed to work with the RAC in partnership with the hopes of putting together a town hall to discuss emergency communication procedures with the public. And so maybe almost a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, the RAC team received this proposal from the board on page 33 about what will be one in a series of steps of engaging the public and talking to the public about this important matter. And so what we need to do tonight, I believe, is I would like to hear your input on this proposal. I heard from some of you already online, but also figure out what you think about it. And then if the RAC does decide to go forward with this on October 11th, whoever participates, be it one or four or five members or more, what do we feel like the RAC will have to bring to the table at this time? Again, this October 11th meeting will be more of a scoping meeting with the hope that by the end of the year, hopefully by the end of 2012, we will have a more formal town hall process that engages and invites all members of the public to attend and speak up. So with that said, I will open the floor up for comments on this proposal. Frank?
I just have a question as to what did you for the board president by the spoken meeting?
Spoken meeting, getting, finding out fact finding session, what are not fact finding, information finding session, talking to staff to see, okay, how are things supposed to work according to staff, but then also talking to us and say, okay, the writers and members of the draft, what are you seeing out there, what are you hearing? So that's what I think is in the spoken meeting, to say, what do we need to know, what is the public going to know, what has been, when we have the town hall meeting come. It's the first step of many. I think it's also the chance for the board to say, recognize this is an issue, and we want to take it on, and we want to take it on in partnership with the RAC or with them at the table. And I think it's just a way to officially open up and say, we're going to address this issue that we need to be addressed. Ben?
I think it's great to have a tabletop discussion about all of this, but I think we should propose a more creative approach. That actually happens within a metro station or at a metro bus stop, where it's more of a, you know, a reenactment or a, you know, a simulation of what would actually happen, and, you know, be what we're doing now, what metro we're doing, to adopt new standards, something that's more in the field, so people can actually see and hear what would happen on the ground. That's very different from talking about what you might do.
Yeah, I mean, I think that can definitely be taken into consideration. And I think the leadership team meets with the board leadership September 27th. So maybe that doesn't happen on October 11th, but maybe at some point you do have a reenactment type discussion of how you would actually. Ron?
I just comment on one of the items, and actually, I guess it's the more general comment than that. A lot of these points that they're going to cover, say, provide information, it seems like they ought to do a little bit more than that. And I'm specifically looking at the third one that says to provide information about the roles, responsibilities, challenges. As a writer, it'd be interesting to know what people are supposed to do, but what I would like to know is what are Metro's training plans for its personnel, which is part of this. Every time I've been involved in incidents, the biggest problem is it seems like the Metro officials don't know what to do. So not only would I like to have information about what they're supposed to do, I would like to have information as to what Metro is doing to make sure that they do it, the training, what happens to people who don't follow the training, and so forth. So it just strikes me that this whole thing needs to be more than just information. This is what we're going to tell people. It needs to be, what are we Metro going to do?
Okay, that's a really good point. I think that's something that I'm not exactly sure who's going to listen. I don't know if I'll be able to make it. I'm hoping that Carl will be able to make it. But these are, I think, the type of feedback that the board wants and that we as RAC members need to get to whoever is going to be our representative or whatever group is going to be our representative on the government. So, if we go forward with that.
So, I said I wasn't going to take that review and make it tonight, but I sent a very worried email about my thoughts about this, and my thoughts have not changed. I think that this is, as I think I said, it would be laughable if this was not typical about how Metro Board chooses to engage the public. This is just typical, and I don't wish to be a part of this. First, we should never say yes to a meeting with as opposed to engage the public that starts at 10 a.m. on Thursday. We just should not do that. That should be out the cards. They should never ask it, and we should never say yes to it. Because I work, and I'm not saying I'm going to work to do that. And we should not encourage other people to do that either. That being said, this whole thing is not what I think that we initially approved months ago. And I know you told me I'm not going to do that because it won't take me a while to do that. But what I will say is over the weekend, I host, I don't host, but I normally host about what is the mud, the conversation in my home, my neighbors, when we talked about Metro, we used to do dinner and things like that. And there's a lady in Chevrolet told me that she was involved in an altercation on the train, on the orange line. Now, she lives right by the Metro station. She hears the train. She was involved in an altercation on Metro, but she was so confused that she has post-traumatic stress issues from it. So now, every time she hears a train outside her window, she goes, she gets anxious by it, unless she takes medicine for it. What we have, and when this happened, she did what she was supposed to do. She alerted the train conductor, she alerted the station manager, she called the police. And they didn't do their jobs. And so what I think what we need to have happen here is a conversation about what is supposed to happen. What are the people supposed to do who are supposed to help people? And this should be a two-way conversation. The idea in this proposal that RAC members would pre-screen with comments from other people who can send their comments online, we should send it out the door. The idea that was last communicated is that we send three, that we have agreed to have three members of the public comment that we pre-screen. We should never use that. I think that when I was appointed to this RAC, I was told that I am appointed here as a writer to share my perspective and the perspective and views of other writers, but I wasn't an Uber writer. I'm a writer like everybody else. And so my job, and what I think our job here, is to create devices so that other writers can amplify their voice within the system. And this proposal does not do that. The last thing that I would say about this, if I understand the scoping meeting, and I think that that's fine, but we started talking about this in May. So the fact that we have to wait and clear till November, December, where it may be snowy, rainy, cold, dark, for a town hall meeting, to me, is we will be derelict in our duty if we get that. I was concerned about partnering with the board before, and this is why. And I am even more concerned about this now. It took them 2 months to get back to us initially on this, and the fact that they want to wait, or they're suggesting that we wait before we engage in a town hall, large scope conversation about the issue that is currently happening every day to people on Metro for half a year, to me, is not something that we should continue to pay. We have the authority to do it. It is in our bylaw. It says this is what our bylaws say we should do. And so I think we should do it, and we should invite the board to join us. And not to.
Deb, and then
Tyke.
Deb.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I just want to say that I
me as a RAC member to invite Metro Shine to police the involved. And also, maybe we need to think about inviting one set of work senators from set of and
set my man out with that my pen, and I got aggressive, and I got him to back off. But at no point was I ever assisted. And that's not an atypical situation. So, you know, and then I was told, well, you need to know on the website. I think in those cases, my question is, what's the, that you're showing that in most cases, the problem gets resolved. So I think that that's what people are looking for, is like, let's see some real fundamental change if you want that person or the people in that station are being trained right, then get them trained. You know, what is that feedback loop that the customers are looking for?
I hear what you're saying, and I think we all probably know someone or unfortunately victims of ourselves of some unfortunate harassment or aggressive behavior. I think Joseph, we will get to that point of having a town hall and having it be at a time that is more convenient for the average working person and having that time for folks to voice their frustration. I think, though, that this meeting here is the first step. I think there's just certain organizations have certain protocols. It doesn't make it right, it doesn't make it wrong, it doesn't make it better, it doesn't make it happen maybe faster. But I think in this case, I think the RAC, we could perhaps go ahead and organize our own meeting. I'm not so confident that we will receive the same level and type of response from staff if we do this on our own than if we do it in conjunction with the board. And I'll just be honest here and say that I think that there's a certain gravity of a situation like this that comes from the board saying staff look into this, and I think even the board is asking themselves what's going on. And so I think we're actually on the same page. I just think we're maybe a step ahead of where the board is and what they're coming to. So I think we will eventually get there to having a town hall. This first meeting just isn't that. And I think if we have maybe some things that we want to negotiate with, maybe it is possible, John, to have that meeting after work on October 11th instead of 11 a.m. or 10 a.m. Who knows? But I think if we put together some things that we're willing to possibly negotiate on and recognize that this is going to be a serious disaster. And I know we all wanted to fix yesterday, and the perfect world would have been fixed yesterday. But I feel like with the board reaching out, the board chair having called me this afternoon to discuss this further, I sense that they recognize the importance of it and that they're trying to work into making things better. We do want the RAC to have to say that. So I see the other end of things where I see that the RAC hasn't worked this closely with the board before in the past. And that it is, again, maybe going to take a little bit of a while for us to get our group, but the good thing is that we're still at the table and we still get to give the voice of riders to the board when we're there at that table. It might not be the time to thump our chest and to have 45 minutes to express everything that's happened. It might just be 10 minutes, but it's a very strategic and very comprehensive about what we feel the riders' concerns are. I think we may get a little bit further. So, Cara, or? Okay.
I just want to listen. I am so grateful that I'm in the room. I am in shock. So what I hear is correctly that there are no public safety policies in place
that are not working very well.
Well, we're talking about an emergency. I think that goes to the core of your
question. When I talk about incidents, I'm talking about emergency severe situations.
I see it says service incidents, as in there's a fire on the red line and the trains aren't running, not someone got beat up on the train. I see those as, that's not correct.
I think this is why, and I don't know.
That's why I think we're talking about two different
things. I think this is why my initial email, I think the first thing that I asked is, have they seen our proposal? And I don't think that they, well, I don't think they read it, because this is not responding to us. This responds to them. This is not responding to us at all. This conversation responds to, I think Carl initially proposed this after there were three articles in the Washington Post, one editorial, about people being beaten up, abused, hit, or whatever.
Well, you can say that they use a different language, and maybe their language is slightly different than what the RAC is, and maybe that's, again, a comment that we need to take to them, is to use more of the terms that we have used.
I don't even think that they're talking about that. I think what this is about is service interruptions and Metro being able to get down on the platform and tell people there are no trains for half an hour because there's a fire or there's an emergency.
Can I butt in here? Because
that's a public safety discussion, correct?
Right, and we had, I believe, and I'll apologize, because I feel like I've had a lot of conversations about this, but I believe at one point, it might have been in July, Carl had proposed this, and Joseph, you're right, there were two, if I remember correctly, specific incidents back in May when this came up. One was the derailment in Roslyn on the North Line, and the second was the incident where somebody got beaten up and was transferred to MPD and didn't get through the transit police. And I believe at the RAF's July meeting, there was a further, Metro staff said, hey, could you guys dig a little deeper and discuss this? And the group did. And it sort of, I believe, came out in discussion that, those are two somewhat disparate topics and might be a little bit ambitious to cover in one meeting. And so pick one or the other. And I believe, and I can thumb through the hopefully completed section of the minutes there to look, that the group wanted to talk about incidents that result from or are associated with disruptions in service. And so that's what then morphed into this.
Not to diminish that,
but I think the RAC recognized, look, there's only so much that can be bit off and chewed. And it was, it was one or the other.
Yeah, I don't think that's what happened, though.
Yeah, I don't recall that either, John. Maybe that's okay. Something we need clarification on, because I kind of remember it being more so for personal incidents, one-on-one nature.
Into the decision they made instead of coming to us. And I think the service standards, for example, is a great example where the board actually kicked it back. Normally we get a presentation, past practice, we get a presentation up, before the board meeting, and then the board would vote on it, and, there wasn't any public participation. So I think that that's a good example. And in this case, let's be clear that many of the board members are volunteers, some of them are elected officials, and it's hard for them to meet after business hours. So maybe the way to be bringing along is that it may person the whole one at outside business hours, knowing that three out of four of the board members are Virginia elected officials and may not be able to come because they have conference. But if you have to take baby steps, you have to call before you come on. And we need to work with the board and bring them along, and it's going to be tough. It's going to have a series of road bumps, but it's the only way that we can change the culture of Metro. Us holding some kind of workshop without, board input and sanction is really not the way that we want to move with this session.
Thanks, Bob. Candace?
Yeah. Basically, what I would just be doing is reiterating what you just said, John, because I feel like if you're having something happen at 10 a.m. in the morning, you're not really talking to the public, especially during a weekday. And I think that the board needs to understand that it's the public that they should be talking to, they should be getting input from. And if you're not going to hold it at a reasonable hour, what's the point? What's the point? This affects the people that ride the Metro every single day. And so they need to understand that 10 a.m. is not a reasonable time for most people.
Right. And I think that that's something that whoever attends this meeting, be it me or Carl, somebody else, that we stress that this type of pointing meeting during the day sometimes or a lot of times it's not going to work if you shouldn't want public input. And I did feel when I spoke with Ms. Hudgens that I felt that she was expressing to me that this is one step in several steps, to get towards the town hall and just addressing the issue overall altogether. So I don't think you're thinking this is the only time for public comment. I think this is a left as a board to have an official medium where we can grasp the situation, figure out what's going on, figure out how to work with the RAC to work to go forward in this issue. It's not, we may not talk about it in the
So then that's really, so that's really the only thing you guys hope to sort of accomplish at this meeting, is just sort of the board and RAC getting on the same page.
Not the board and the RAC, the board and RAC, and the board has to get the information that they feel that they need from the staff. It's one of those things where, you know, we're one of the groups that the board would keep for information, but they're from the provider's perspective at the forefront, always having the first, which is what I think we do really, really well. But I think this meeting is something that the board needs to have on their own to say, okay, we've heard from the RAC, we've heard from others, this is an important issue, but let's have a kickoff meeting, so to speak. Let's talk about when we do a town hall, what questions, you know, what answers the public are not, maybe not want to hear, but what do they want to know? And so I think this is that preliminary step towards that town hall.
Okay, I guess my other question is, aren't there already policies and procedures in place for all of these incidents? Are we talking about why these policies and procedures don't work?
And that's what, again, this would be a great comment for the RAC to take, and I think that's what I'll go ahead and speak, but I think that's something for us to bring. Where are the policies that address this, and how do you enforce those policies? It might be something that the board doesn't know itself, or wants to become more familiar with.
I just want to follow up on what you're saying. You guys already know a lot of different issues, and they're all really good questions and comments. So I want to make sure, first of all, that you know that the board is fully aware that this is not a public comment period that they're soliciting in the middle of the day. They absolutely understand that. That is not the purpose of this meeting on the 11th. It really is to have a conversation about policies and procedures that are in place and changes that have happened as a result of what we have learned from the incidents that have happened. And then also to get the RAC's perspective, and they were hoping that you could collect some initial comments that could be addressed by the panelists who will have the answers that you all are raising now. And then taking those and formulating sort of like a structure for the public input process, if you will. So there will be a public input process that will not happen on October 11th. Not Helen.
Yes. Carol, Barbara, Joseph, and then we are almost running out of time.
Okay, I'm confused. Is the safety that I'm confessing to John Murray, is the safety committee portfolio include physical safety as well as the kinds of things we're talking about, like the ground and rise?
Yes, it okay. Both, that's, yes.
So those are included. Because it seems like we all have a different recollection of how this came to be. I thought that we were talking about emergency incidents that affect masses of people. But what's startling to me is we now have heard one RAC member and a report from a second RAC member about two women who were assaulted. And I personally do not want to brush that aside. I think, and here's what I think, given my age and activism, I mean, I subscribe fully to the paranoid view of history, okay? But here's what I suggest we do. I think that instead of calling this, what do you call it?
Incident communication?
Right. What I think we need to do is to have a meeting between RAC members and the safety committee, and not make more of an attempt to invite the public than would normally be the channels that you use, because this is an open meeting. What I don't like is the control situation, where on the one hand we say that we're going to be in partnership with the RAC, and the board is going to be in partnership, but then there's a very controlled format. The chair of the safety committee would preside, and the members of the safety committee and the RAC would listen and pose questions to the chair of the safety committee. So that sounds like a very carefully controlled and choreographed meeting. And I think we would be a laughingstock if we further control it by being part of a plan to have pre-screened numbers of the public. I just think that's just the wrong thing to do. I think what we should do on October 11th is have a meeting together and understand better the process not involve any outreach to the public.
That meeting, you could kind of say, is actually going to happen on September 27th between the RAC leadership team and the chair, leadership. But September 27th, this is when we have a quarterly meeting with the board, and at that board will be the vice chair, who I believe is the committee chair. So he will be there, and we can further, we can, the RAC leadership team is going to take all of this that we hear from you all, and say, this is what makes us uncomfortable, this is what we feel strongly about, this is where we're not really willing to bend, because we understand that pride is very important.
Well.
And so that would be before the October 7th.
I'm simply saying that I kind of agree with Joseph. I think that we should not put ourselves in a position where the board at some point down the road can tell the public, oh, no, we got your input through the RAC. That's what I don't want to use, I don't like to be used. And that's the sense that I'm getting. That may not be their intent, but I think that's the way it will be perceived by a large number of people. And I know we're in a peculiar position. We're appointed by the board, and we're supposed to represent the riders. But I don't think this is the way to go.
Well, I think you raised a good point, and I think if we do go forward, then we have to be mindful that we are being independent, and we have to be mindful of the type of statements that we make, and that hopefully whatever documentation comes out of it, that we look at it closely and make sure it truly reflects what we as the RAC feel or have decided on, and not what the board wants the public to have the RAC has decided on. So Barbara, Joseph, Darn, and then you all, we got about 20 minutes left, so I'm going to have to ask you to think about, can we move forward on this? I don't hear any outright words.
Yeah, I just wanted to echo my own confusion about purpose, because I heard that this was supposed to be public, and so now it's more panelists. And it says that there's a panelist supposed to prepare customers. The first two goals are like, to inform customers, yet a lot of the public service will not really inform the customers or day-to-day really hard.
So that's a comment if the RAC is that everyone on the board, that the leadership team will take to them and say, you know, we have some understanding here, we're not understanding, we're not on the same page as you are with that group. Joseph, and then Don.
I think I said before I wanted to lay on this, but I am going to choose a little bit. First, we did have a proposal. We did have a proposal that we voted on, that we approved, that was clear about what we wanted to do here. That proposal should be voted on here. And now if we need it again, we should go back and get it, and we should get it again. That's my thought about that. What I will say though is that this is clear to me about what it's supposed to be. First proposal that we have here today does not talk about what happens then. It doesn't talk about tomorrow. It talks about what's going to happen on October 11th. Doesn't talk about what's going to happen on October 13th or in December. We heard that came today from a phone call from the chair. Let there be no mistake. I'm pretty sure the chair was informed about the concerns over the proposal that the chair communicated to us. And I'm pretty sure that the chair wasn't just sitting in her office and decided to call us to clarify a proposal that says in the proposal that for the October 11th meeting, the Metro communications and marketing staff will go through all this promotion about this October 11th meeting at 10 o'clock a.m. that apparently the public is not supposed to come to, and they're not supposed to be involved in. So now, this proposal does not try with what we're being told that the proposal is. And so I think that we have a very clear question about what we want to ask today. Do we want to go forward with a meeting that we don't know anything about, that seems to have changed its context in the last few hours? Or do we want to talk about coming up with our own meeting? Now, we did this to ourselves, by the way. I will tell you that we did this to ourselves. When we decided to ask the board for their permission for this. But we've been talking about this since May. It is time that we act on this and that we move forward. Now, as a person who's planned a town hall meeting that involves the RAC, I know this dance. I know this is going to take us a few months. We're going to do this dance, and it's going to take us a few months. We did it with the youth town hall meeting. That's fine. But what I want to make sure is that what we did for the youth town hall meeting, we do for this meeting, and that we include the public in every sense and every step going forward. Because if we don't, let me tell you this. I'm the only one who seems to be speaking against this, right? So I think that
I'm sorry, I have to keep the form, and I have to keep the legal.
I will do it.
I hear what you're saying, we have to make a decision, because we have three other agenda.
I'm done.
Okay, thanks, Dory.
Yes, I agree with the confusion issue, okay? But here in the event overview, it says clearly here, through promotion by the public relations team, the public and media would be invited to attend. One thing is to attend, another thing is to participate. That's the real big issue here. One thing is to attend and listen, which is like I said, would listen to the discussion as well as pose questions through the chair of the safety committee or whatever. Now, the public that was invited to attend, they just go there to listen. Is that my, that's the way I understand it, right?
Based off of this proposal, the public, no, the public, they can attend, but they can actually submit comments online ahead of the meeting and have that addressed by, I think, by a RAC member who asked those questions. So they can participate, but they participate online and submitting their question before they heard the presentation.
Okay, so that is online.
Okay, with maybe other people. Again, I have to remind you that this is one step in a series of several steps. People may not necessarily like, we can put together a list and say, this is what we prefer, this is what we feel is right with us.
But this is step one of the polling, the town hall meeting towards that. Okay, so this is just the first one, the first meeting to plan this town hall.
Correct.
Okay, but in the planning meeting, then why are we inviting the media, public and media for a planning meeting? That's
the confusion we need to have.
The big one that I've had is, if this is a planning meeting, which is the way I understood it, why are we inviting the media and public?
Okay, so it is now 8:16, and this is important, but we've taken a bit too much time. So what I'd like to do is, other than, I'm going to stop comments for right now. Joseph, I understand that I think you and Carol and maybe Ben aren't necessarily in favor of this. Is there anyone else that is not in favor of,
I think the proposal is just so poorly written that nobody here understands what we're actually talking about.
But this is a draft, and the most important question is, do we want to work with the board together going forward on this or not? Because this is a draft. If we don't, then we need to let them know now so that we don't waste the board's time, although they try to come to us.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about do we want to work with the board, but I think the question is, what is this meeting about? Is this a meeting before the meeting? Is this a meeting that's open to the public?
Yeah.
You know, I've heard people talk about it with very different assumptions about what this meeting is about. I think if we have a better written one pager, then we would have avoided at least 20 minutes of discussion tonight.
So then this is what we need to go back to,
yeah,
the board and say, we need additional information.
Exactly. What is the incident? You know, we're talking about personal safety, or we're talking about system-wide incidents. Is this the meeting where the public will be, you know, is this the public presentation, or is this the meeting about?
Right. So I'm not certain that, John, were you able to capture a lot of these questions?
Oh, yeah. This is all recorded, and Lloyd has got it, so. On many different fronts.
I think the best way to move forward on this is, I'm going to ask right now, is anyone opposed to the RAC working with the board, hopefully in partnership, to hold such a meeting on incidents or emergency communications, be it small personal incidents or more mass or service-wide type incidents? Because I think that's what we need, the leadership team needs to know right now, so that when we go meet the board leadership at the end of September, we can say to them, yes, the RAC does want to work with you on this. No, the RAC does not want to work with you on this. And if we do, we need to take them a list of questions and our concerns.
When you say a special meeting, do you mean the town hall?
Or the October 11th?
No, the October 11th meeting, if we decide to work with the RAC, then we have been invited, and we work with the board, then we have been invited to attend the October 11th meeting as one of several steps leading to a public town hall. No, this is not the final town hall, as Lloyd has said earlier. This is one step of probably several steps, maybe three or four steps, to reach a public town hall.
Kelsey, I'll say I'm willing to give you the leeway to do what I think as chair you need to do, with the exception that I'll tell you this, you already seem to not know if you can go on October 11th. I know that it's in the middle of the school day, I can't go on October 11th. I think that I'm willing to do that, and I propose that if we can find a more meaningful time so that we can have better RAC representation on that day.
Yeah, and let me also remind you that Carl is the lead on this topic, and so I had asked Carl to take the lead in discussion, he could not make it, but maybe that's since he's the lead, hopefully he can attend on October 11th, and if I can make it, unfortunately, it's too early in my schedule right now for you to make, given a certain project that I'm working on, but hopefully I can make it. So, am I hearing from everyone that the RAC is in agreement, that the leadership team should go forward when we meet with the board leadership and say this is something that we'd like to work with you on partnership on? We have some major concerns about proposals, but we do want to work with you.
But I think what I said though, well, this is my financial point to say, is that we ask that the meeting on October 11th not be at 10 a.m. for...
That's right, that's right. And that can be on the list of concerns. Okay.
I really think October 22nd is too late to make some actual changes to this proposal with a possible change to meeting time. So if anyone can talk to someone sooner than that, but
yeah, I mean,
if things wait to the 27th to change the meeting time into entirely change the proposal.
Right, we need people that have we have a make a quarterly schedule when we can meet with leadership, when both sets of leadership can meet, but I don't see why we can't interact via email or other ways to kind of work out come to certain points of understanding before we actually meet and meet together. So we might have that before you all before September 27th. That's just the next time I know personally you're going to move that home.
Also, the chair had asked for your feedback to be submitted before September, by September 10th.
So actually, by the end of this week, I'm going to try my best to make sure that we have compiled all of your concerns. And maybe John
will send that
out to the
RAC. Lorda and I will be working on that tomorrow.
Okay, great. So I'm going to move on to the next agenda item, because I think we got a lot of information today. Upcoming committee meetings. Then.
Yes, the long-awaited second meeting of the airport advisory group, I know the first meeting was supposed to be in March or something like that. We finally got a meeting with the Metro Washington Airport Authority. Judging by what everybody's been saying today, it's not an ideal time, but I think it's it's a better time than we probably could have gotten otherwise. So it's going to be the 25th, which is a Tuesday.
September.
11 o'clock, unfortunately, that's the time we could get here at Metro headquarters. So at least the location is accessible for most people. And we're going to be here. John, do we have a room for that yet?
We do not. It will either be, it's a Tuesday?
Yeah.
It will likely be in this room.
Okay.
But I will okay, confirm we'll that. Our office, we don't control this room, so I will confirm that with our space planning folks.
Sure. The person that we know is coming is the guy who's in charge of the Silver Line, project under the Metro Washington Authority. I've asked him to bring other people who would be able to talk about accessibility to the airport. I don't have knowledge about who else he's going to bring yet, but I'm going to be sort of following up with him, or actually his assistant, who's going to do most of the work for him, and advising on what's going to happen. So, can I just get a show of hands of who might think about attending that meeting?
Tuesday,
the 20th. Tuesday,
can
you say that's a good question. I would say at least an hour, maybe an hour and a half. That would not go over that, I don't know. And like last time, I'm going to try and prepare a list of questions beforehand, sort of based on what we heard in the previous meeting with the bus planning staff. What we already know, and I'll send that around as soon as possible so people can add questions to it just so we can get a sense of where we are and set up focus discussion.
Thanks, and I want to thank both Ben and John for being so persistent to get this meeting to actually happen. I know there were a lot of emails that weren't returned, there were a lot of come up stuff to meet with us, so while it's 11 o'clock the day, I appreciate being here and you all being able to work something out like that. So any other upcoming committee meetings?
None. That's all we got.
Okay, moving on to questions or comments on the RAC Chair and AAC Chair report. John, we don't have any reports.
There was, I did slip Patrick's report in the rear of your.
You do have that from last month.
Patrick's report, is it from July or August?
It's from August. The AAC actually just submitted a written report that described their July goings on.
Can you give us a 2-minute recap, or are you?
No, I think we're good unless there's questions on the report.
Any questions for Pat?
We're heading into more access with the RFP going out, and we can also, I don't mean to address the very health related, which I think is going to be, I don't know, good schools. So those are the two main things we're working on.
Thanks. So now I'm going to move on to open my community meetings, and I actually have a few announcements. One, speaking about RAC Chair report to the board, Joseph, RAC will have to submit a report for September. So I don't know if you or the working group have had time yet to compile whatever summary statements you'd like to include, but please work with John or whoever, or Carol. So I can include a paragraph or rightfully acknowledge that town hall and our September meeting. The other thing I wanted to mention is remember to inform your contacts and your networks about our RAC meetings. That's all that you were mentioned to get on the website, and we got this new public participation process now. Let's get more people here so that we can get additional feedback from each other. Also, I wanted to address the comment that spoke first about more outreach on behalf of the RAC. One thing I was thinking about, and maybe this will happen with emergency, whatever, following town hall, is that maybe it's before some of these more important meetings, or maybe even before budget to town hall, if the RAC has like an open house, where I know Ramada does open house, it's like an hour before those things, but maybe we could have at the Maryland budget town hall meeting where the RAC, the Maryland RAC members are there an hour before and have a table to meet the public and group them and just speak with them. So let's kind of think of ways that we can do things that work with our schedules as is to better engage the public and let them know. So Joseph, also you have transparency concerns?
Are we there?
Yeah.
So I had asked Kelsey, and Kelsey wanted to see what other people thought about, I'm forgetting the email right now, the concept of email, but asking Metro, or looking into how Metro responds to requests to get information about their mystery rider program. It's a program that Metro has restarted, and it's more expensive now than it was before. It sounds like they have at least got their first round of information, and but they haven't released it to the public. And they're not released it to me, and it's proprietary. And so I wanted to see if the RAC would be interested in hearing what some of the findings that I guess are not proprietary, if I do understand what some proprietary things could be, and if you want to ask them for maybe a presentation about that information.
Yeah, and then my response to you, one reason I wanted Joseph to come and talk to all of us about it is because I think transparency is something that has been mentioned for a while throughout the law, not just for this mystery rider program. So if it's something that you write a letter or you have a staff presentation on just this mystery rider program, but we can take it a step further and say, let's look at this system wide, what is going on with transparency and the information on the access that riders have information. Any comments on what Joseph has proposed? Okay, so let's just think about it and be like, Joseph, if you got any comments. Chris, and then Kendall?
No.
Chris and then Ben.
I had an opportunity to ride for several hours hard on Friday while on a long layover at San Francisco Airport, and I brought some printed materials, and I copies of some things to get to our thing.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, just a comment. I think it would be helpful, this is sort of a kind of chair, that maybe in the future we as RAC members should hold ourselves to the same standards that we're holding the public speakers to in terms of time. I think we have a wonderful clock system there. I think we should really start to use it. I think meetings would go a lot faster. I think we sort of educate ourselves in how to confine our statements to a minute, 30 seconds, 2 minutes, or whatever. That's just something to think about.
No, I agree. I use my phone, so, but, you know, we have a spot for everyone to speak, and everyone knows. Okay, Don?
Just wanted everyone to know, Saturday morning, there's going to be a tour, 10 a.m., Columbia Pike, sponsored by the Virginia Chapter and Association Coalition for Shawna Grove. Chris Zimmerman, and it'll feature, actually, the effects of the street furniture.
What is it?
It's a tour of Columbia, Pike. And I got an invitation. I have to say, I've been so busy this week. The Amalia with Holly on the road yesterday and part of today. There's going to be a tour at 10 a.m. on Columbia Pike, sponsored by the Virginia Chapter of the American Planning Association Coalition.
Darn.
This Saturday.
Darn, I have the email because a good friend of mine is the local APA person.
Okay.
So I'll just, when I go back upstairs, I'll forward it to you all tonight.
Okay.
As he said, it's Saturday morning on Columbia Pike about what's going on down there.
Great. Any other comments? John Lloyd and Chandra.
Just to let you all know, two things. I hope I'm not going to be limited to 2 minutes. Two things. One, coming down the pike, projected to come down the pike, are some hearings on bus service changes, which will probably take place in the later part of October. Tentatively, they're scheduled to go to the Customer Service Committee next week, and approval by the board at the end of September, which would set the stage for hearings, I think, towards the end of October. So if that's something you want to think about, one, if there's any information you want on what's being proposed. Also, you know, you all had talked about coming out to hearings or, you know, whatever town hall meetings Metro is holding and using those as a forum to meet with riders. That would be an opportunity to do that.
Yes, especially if we know which routes.
Right, yeah, and so we'll be getting you information on that. I'll make sure that it gets sent out when we post the materials for next week's customer service meeting. And then the other thing is towards the end of this month, I'm going to start the annual Beating the Bushes for members of the RAC to do outreach to get people to apply. And also for those of you whose terms end in December, I will be sending something out to you to ask you if you're interested in reapplying. So if your term is set to expire in December of 2012, off the top of my head, I don't know who that is. But if your term is set to expire at the end of this year, I will be sending you out something so that you can reapply if you wish to be considered for reappointment by the board.
Thanks. And that reminds me, John, we actually need to work with you to arrange our jurisdictional meetings.
Yes.
A lot of board members, Maryland RAC members, et cetera.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, in Virginia, we're down to 3 people only, so. Okay. Any other comments, open meetings, announcements? All right, hearing none, it's 8:32, and I'm going to adjourn the meeting. Thank you all.
Thank you.